one of the characteristics of the Buddha's teachings, he said that they go against the stream. So if we go down to the Red River and we throw something in it that floats, piece of styrofoam, you could probably find some styrofoam already in the river, but toss it into the river, and what's going to happen? It's just going to float down. Right? It's going to go along with the stream. The same thing is true in the world, that for the most part, people just go along with things. That the world encourages us to seek happiness in short-term things, to seek happiness through material accumulation, getting more and more things into our lives, or having more and more friends, or being more and more popular. And for the most part, people go along with those things. Why? Because that's how the streams flow. And if you just hop into the stream, the current's going to take you in one direction. But the teachings of the Buddha, they go against so much of the ways of the world. Right? The Buddha is encouraging us to seek happiness in a very different way than most people do in the world. And so when it comes to learning these teachings, listening to these teachings, we have to think about things that people don't usually think about, or that people don't think about in a skillful way. So one of these things is death. So how many of us like to think about death? Right? If your friends invite you over for dinner, and you sit down at the table and you say, "Wait a minute, before we eat, I'd like to talk about death. Have you thought about the fact that you're going to die today?" Your friends might. They might say, "Wait a minute. We invited you over to have a good time. Why are you bringing this up?" Right? People don't like to think about it. And not only that, but they may even avoid situations where they would have to think about it. Right? We know sometimes when someone loses a loved one, maybe a child, maybe a spouse, some people even break off their friendships with that person, because whenever they see that person, they remember, "Oh, their baby just died, and I don't want to think about that." Right? We can see that in the world. The sacrifices that people will make to avoid thinking about death. But the Buddha understood that death is something that we need to think about in a skillful way. So much so that the Buddha taught that thinking about death in a wholesome, skillful way leads all the way to the final goal of his spiritual training. That when we practice this mindfulness of death and we do it correctly, it leads to not having to experience death again. Right? Because if we pass away at the end of this human life and we haven't attained liberation, what has to happen? We have to be born again. And when we're born again, what do we have to experience? Death. Right? The Buddha understood the cause of death very clearly. What's the cause of death? Birth. Anybody that's born has to die. So one of the ways that he talks about nibbana, liberation, is calling it the deathless. right? Because once someone attains nibbana, they don't have to experience this death over and over and over again. But even an arahant, a saint who attains nibbana in this life, even they have to experience death of this body, right? They don't escape from that. But they don't have to experience death again and again in the cycle of samsara, cycle of birth and death. So last month, I believe in the morning time, you got to learn about cemetery meditation, right? So recollection of the dead body and how our body is just like a body that will lay in the cemetery. Right? Also not a very pleasant subject for the world. Right? You know, someone asks you, oh, what do you do when you go to those retreats? What do they talk about? Oh, what do they talk about? How our body's going to be rotting someday in a cemetery, or they talk about how we're going to die. And an ordinary person just doesn't know what to think about that. Right? They may think that you're a little strange for giving up a nice sunny day to think about these things. But fortunately, we have instructions from the Buddha to help this make sense to us, right? Because simply thinking about the fact that we're going to die, that's not the goal, right? That's the path that we follow to reach the goal. So one day there was a Brahmin who went to see the Buddha. His name is Janasona, and we see him in several places in the scriptures, this Brahmin, and he always seems like a very honest and sincere person. And because he's interested in spiritual things, he goes to see the Buddha, and he asks people about the Buddha. So one day, this Brahmin, Janasoni, goes to the Buddha, pays homage, bows down, engages in some friendly chit-chat, and then he says this to the Buddha. He says, "Master Gotam, I hold this thesis in view, that there is no one subject to death who is not frightened and terrified of death." So he says to the Buddha, "This is my theory. This is my view. Anybody that's going to die is afraid of death. Right? A rock, not going to die, so it's not afraid of death. But a human being, an animal that has to die, I think that all of them are afraid of death." And so the Buddha says to him, "Well, Brahman, there are those who are subject to death that are frightened and terrified of death. But there are also those subject to death that are not frightened and terrified of death." So maybe surely this Brahman was afraid of death. Right? Because if he wasn't afraid of death, then he wouldn't have that fear. So, we don't know. We don't know if that was his strong motivation for asking the question, if maybe he was a little embarrassed to say, "Venerable Sir, I'm so afraid of death. Please help me." Right? But this was the effect that he got. The Buddha said to him, "Well, there are people, there are individuals who have to die, who are afraid of death. But there are also individuals in the world who aren't afraid of death." So the Buddha says to him, "And Brahman, who are those subject to death that are frightened and terrified of death? Here, someone is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving for sensual pleasures." So someone who has very strong desires for things to see, things to hear, things to smell, taste, touch. this person who has these strong desires, when they incur a severe and debilitating illness, they think, alas, the sensual pleasures dear to me will leave me, and I will have to leave those sensual pleasures. So, this first type of person, their happiness comes from material things, whether it's food, whether it's music, entertainment, or other people. This is the foundation of their happiness in the world. They don't know a happiness outside of these things. This person gets sick, deathly ill, and when death is upon them, they think, ah, wait a minute, if I die, I'm going to lose all these things that I love. My beautiful house that I worked so hard to build, to buy. All the beautiful people around me. I'm going to lose out on all these things. The Buddha says, he sorrows, languishes, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast, and becomes confused. This is a person who's subject to death, who is frightened and terrified of death. It makes sense, right? If the foundation of our happiness is material things, when we're faced with losing those things, when we think, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get to experience the same kind of happiness again, the mind is disturbed. The Buddha continues. He's going to talk about four different situations. Second situation. Again, someone is not devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving for the body. When he incurs severe and debilitating illness, he thinks, alas, this body too will leave me, and I will have to leave this body. He sorrows, languishes, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast, and becoming confused. This too is one subject to death who is frightened and terrified of death. So, similar to the first person, but this person has a very strong attachment to the body. For most people, the body is who they are. The body is a source of happiness. It's a source of identity. When we're young, we're usually very proud of our strong, healthy body. Right? Many people, as they get older, they, especially in the West, they try to keep up the illusion that the body is strong and healthy and beautiful. Right? And there's nothing wrong with taking care of the body. You don't want to misunderstand that. But when we identify so closely with this body, thinking it's mine, thinking this is who I am, when the body changes, it's disturbing. When the legs that were able to carry us around for so long suddenly stop working, it's discouraging. Right? When the senses stop working, it's discouraging. People get sad and depressed, thinking, you know, this body that I've worked so hard to take care of, that's helped me experience so many wonderful things, it's letting me down, it's disappointing. And when we have to face death, if our identity is tied up in this body, right, some people, they don't even like to walk past a cemetery because they think, ah, it's full of rotting bodies. This body of mine is also going to rot. I don't want to think about that. And when they're faced with reality, faced with the fact that the body is going to die, and they're so attached, it's very disturbing. So the Buddha says, this is also someone who's afraid to die. The third type of person, the Buddha says, again, someone has not done what is good and wholesome, or made a shelter for himself, but has done what is evil, cruel, and defiled. So this person hasn't collected good karma, hasn't abandoned bad karma. And specifically, the Buddha uses this language. He says, they haven't made a shelter for themselves. So this is obviously, this isn't talking about building a house or having someplace to live. It's talking about what? How is it that we build a shelter for ourselves in this samsara? Whatever physical shelter we build in this life, that's not really a shelter, looking at the big picture, because we leave it behind. The Buddha taught that the only shelter that we can give ourselves for future lives, for this dangerous round of samsara, is good karma. That when we practice good actions in this life, those results don't just come to us in this life. We may not even see them in this life. But in our next life, in future lives, we have to experience the good results. If we practice generosity in this life, we may see the results of that generosity here and now. But we may not. We may have to be confident that in our next life, in some future life, we'll get to experience the good results of the actions that we've done. And when we read the suttas, we see many examples of this. So this third type of person hasn't done that. Maybe they were very wealthy, but they never thought to give things away. Maybe they were very stingy and thought, the way that I look out for myself, the way that I protect myself, is to hold on to these things. Of course, the Buddha taught that that's exactly the wrong way to protect ourselves. That he gave a very beautiful simile that if there's a house and the house burns down, everything that's in the house, gone. But say that person had kept a pot outside of the house. Maybe they'd lent it to someone or had put it somewhere outside the house. When the house burns down, the only possession that they have left is that pot. In the same way, when we have to be separated from all these material possessions that we have, anything that we've kept for ourselves, when we die, that's out of the picture. We're never going to get the benefit of that again. But when we practice generosity, even to a tiny little degree, the result of that generosity, the result of that material gain that we give away, may come back to us for a thousand lifetimes, experiencing uncalculable results. But this third type of person hasn't done that. And when they think about having to die, they realize that they haven't looked out for themselves, thinking about future lives. The person thinks, alas, I have not done anything good and wholesome, nor have I made a shelter for myself, but I have done what is evil, cruel, and defiled. When I pass on, I will meet the appropriate fate. He sorrows, languishes, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast and becoming confused. This too is one subject to death who is frightened and terrified of death. We can see this happening, right? People who've led lives that were not very skillful, who have big regrets, right? Maybe they've mistreated their families or they've harmed others. And when it comes time for them to die, their mind is overwhelmed thinking about these things. Right? We can see that. It's not an uncommon thing. And maybe this Brahmin who's talking to the Buddha, right? Maybe he had relatives that he had seen passing away, and they had cried out to him, right, talking about the regrets that they had. And so this Brahmin just collects proof that someone who's going to die is going to be unhappy, is going to suffer because of that, is going to be afraid of that. So the fourth situation, again, someone here is perplexed, doubtful, and undecided about the good Dhamma. So the Dhamma is, in India, it's a generic term for religious practices. It's also specifically the word that the Buddha used to call his teachings. So again, someone here is perplexed, doubtful, and undecided about the good Dhamma. When he incurs a severe and debilitating illness, he thinks, "Alas, I'm perplexed, doubtful, and undecided about the good Dhamma." He sorrows, languishes, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast, and becomes confused. This too is one subject to death who is frightened and terrified of death. So this is also something that we can see a lot, that when someone is on their deathbed or close to dying, they end up having all of these questions about religious things. Right? They may not understand even the religion that they were taught, that they grew up with. They may think, you know, if I was created by a good God, then why am I having to experience this suffering? Right? Confused. But maybe they do have some faith in the Buddha's teachings, but when push comes to shove, they realize they have a lot of questions that they never asked. They may understand karma in a way that it's incorrect. And so misunderstanding karma at the end of one's life can cause a lot of mental problems. So this is the fourth type of person that the Buddha says, yes, this is someone else who's going to be afraid of death. Someone who has these questions and has never taken the chance to learn the teachings, to ask questions, to get answers about these very heavy topics. So surely this Brahmin had met these four different kinds of people. Then the Buddha says, but there's another type of person, very different than these first four situations. The Buddha says, here someone is devoid of lust, desire, affliction, thirst, passion, and craving for sensual pleasures. When he incurs a severe and debilitating illness, he does not think, alas, the sensual pleasures dear to me will leave me, and I will have to leave those sensual pleasures behind. He does not sorrow, languish, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become confused. This is a person who is subject to death, who is not frightened and terrified of death. So this kind of person is very difficult to meet in the world, right? Especially someone who has removed the desire for material things completely from their mind, the deepest root of desire. When that root of desire is not present in the mind, then it's not possible for someone to hold on to these things. That someone who's trained their mind to not just see the gratification in sensual pleasures. So this is the thing. The Buddha understood very clearly that sensual pleasures, they're nice, right? That delicious food, it's delicious, right? He never said delicious food wasn't delicious. He never said that beautiful bodies weren't beautiful. This is the gratification of sensual pleasures. But there's more to the picture, right? The Buddha talked about gratification, and he talked about danger. So what's the danger of sensual pleasures? They're impermanent. They don't last. Beyond that, everybody likes sensual pleasures. Most everybody. And so people want to steal away the things that we have. Right? The more wealthy we get, the harder we have to work to guard our property. When we're really, really wealthy, we may even have to hire our own bodyguards. Right? Is that a happy situation when someone wakes up in the morning and realizes, I'm in danger because of these sensual pleasures? Someone might break into my house and steal them from me. Might even hurt me. Right? There was a prince named Bhadya, and he heard the Buddha's teachings and became a monk. And one day he was in the forest meditating, and all of a sudden he started shouting out, "Ah, what bliss! Ah, what bliss!" And some monks that were nearby heard this. And the first thing they thought was, poor Bhatia. He's sitting here in the forest and he's thinking about all of the sensual pleasures that he had when he was a human. Right? He was a prince in a palace. So surely he's sitting there sad because he doesn't have these things anymore, and he's thinking about all of the enjoyment that he got from those things in the palace. So they go to the Buddha and they say, we need to help, Venerable Sir, we need to help this Bhadya. He keeps crying out for the sensual pleasures that he had as a prince. So the Buddha said, okay, well, bring him here. Ask him to come and talk to us. And so they go off and get him, and the Buddha asks, Venerable Bhadya, is it true that you sit in the forest sometimes and you cry out, ah, what bliss, ah, what bliss? And the Venerable Bhadya says, yes, it's true. So this was the way the Buddha worked. He was very very skillful in dealing with things like this. He always said, okay, well, let's get it straightened out, call that person here, and he would ask them, what's going on? Is this true what they say about you? And Bhadya said, yes, I sometimes do that. And the Buddha said, well, what is it that, why are you saying that? What is it that's so blissful? And the Venerable Bhadya said, Venerable Sir, when I was a prince in the palace, I was always afraid because people were jealous of me, right? Rival kingdoms wanted to invade us. Poor people wanted to steal away the sensual pleasures that I had. There might have even been jealous brothers and sisters who wanted me dead, right? Because as long as I was alive, they wouldn't have the power, right? When my father passed away, when my mother passed away. So I had to have guards, right? Even outside my bedroom. I couldn't sleep without someone guarding me. So dangerous was that life. But now I sit in the forest here. All I have is this robe that I'm wearing, my alms bowl, and all of my happiness comes from meditation. All of my happiness comes from not being attached to these sensual pleasures. How much safer I am now that I'm not tied up with all these dangerous things. Right? Even monks didn't understand that. But this Bhadya, not attached to those things. So is he likely someone who's going to be afraid of death? Be afraid thinking, I'm going to lose this this robe that I have, I'm going to lose my alms bowl, right? He wouldn't think that way. Because even those things, he would be using just as objects to take care of the body. So a second type of person, the Buddha says. Again, someone is devoid of lust, desire, affection, thirst, passion, and craving for the body. When he incurs a severe and debilitating illness, he does not think, alas, this body dear to me will leave me, and I will have to leave this body. He does not sorrow, languish, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become confused. This too is one subject to death who is not frightened and terrified of death. So, the Buddha wanted us to see this body for what it really is. That it's not something that lasts forever. It's not something that we really have control over when it comes down to it. Right? When someone's young and healthy and strong, they think, yes, I can do what I want with this body. This body is something helpful for me. Without realizing that, yeah, it's just a temporary situation. At any point, the body can break down. That we may even have within us right now something that will cause our death in an instant. Right? We can have some weakness in a blood vessel that we don't even know about, and just like that, we can die. A wise person remembers these things. They remember, you know, this body, it can't really be counted on. I take care of it as best I can, but someday it's going to disappoint me. Right? People, for the most part, really don't want to believe that. They really don't want to think that way. Right? The drugstores are full of ways to help us pretend that that's not the case. Right? That if we can just get the right cream, if we can just get the right, you know, paste to rub on, we'll rub away this reality. But it's there. So if we're constantly training our minds, remembering, yeah, this body, it's useful for some things, but it's not my refuge. It can't be what I base my security on. If we're constantly remembering, yep, this body, it's just a borrowed thing. It's made up of liquid and solid and heat, and when those things no longer work well together, the body will rot back into the earth. If we train the mind in this way, then when that day comes, we won't be sad. We won't be afraid. Just like we're not afraid when the sun sets at night, right? It's not a shock to us. It's not surprising. It's just what the sun does. Same thing is true of this body. One day, it's going to break up. One day, it's going to fail us. And if we constantly remember that, it doesn't mean that we stop taking care of it, right? Keep taking showers and those things, because it's nice for the people around us. But don't count on the body. We shouldn't put our happiness dependent on the body. The third situation for this person not afraid. Again, someone has not done what is evil, cruel, and defiled, but has done what is good and wholesome, and made a shelter for himself. When he incurs a severe and debilitating illness, he thinks, "Indeed, I have not done anything evil, cruel, and defiled, but I have done what is good and wholesome, and made a shelter for myself. When I pass on, I will meet the appropriate fate." He does not sorrow, languish, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become confused. This, too, is one subject to death who is not frightened and terrified of death. So, if we can look back at our life and think, yeah, I've done some really good things. I used to be a very angry person, but I worked hard to give up anger. I used to be a very stingy person, and I worked hard to give up this stinginess. I used to be attached to unimportant material things, and I loosened that attachment. Maybe I got rid of it completely. Or maybe even just loosened it a little bit. Then, as we look back on our lives, we can think, yeah, in this life I really achieved something. Most people, when they're forced to look back at their lives, they think about the material achievements that they've had. Degrees, awards, right, possessions, houses, cars. But when we think about samsara, that's not an achievement. It's the result of previously done actions. It doesn't have anything to do with our next life. So this person who's done good things, their mind can rest on that. Right? So same is true for us. That when we look back on our lives, we can think, yeah, I've done some good things. I've tried to train my mind. Right? Even just the short little bit that we've meditated together this afternoon, extremely powerful good karma. Right? It may seem like a simple little nothing. Right? We may just think, oh, but my mind wandered again and again. But really, taking even just a few minutes to try and train the mind, to concentrate the mind, the Buddha said, very, very powerful good karma. Right? We don't have to build hospitals, right, to be able to reflect back on our life and think, ah, I did something good. Right? Even if we can just help one person, right, who's sick, who needs medicine. When it comes time to pass on, we can think, yes, I've helped people. I've practiced generosity. I've practiced giving up hatred and resentment. So when we're confident in these things, then passing away isn't such a scary prospect. So the fourth situation. Again, someone is unperplexed, doubt-free, and decided about the good Dhamma. When he incurs a severe and debilitating illness, he thinks, "I'm unperplexed, doubt-free, and decided about the good Dhamma." He does not sorrow, languish, and lament. He does not weep, beating his breast, and become confused. This too is one subject to death who is not frightened and terrified of death. So if we work hard to understand the Buddha's teachings, if we ask questions when we have doubts, this builds a confidence in our mind. We're able to not be afraid of losing the body. We're able to be happy thinking about the good actions that we've done. Right? So it's possible that this Brahmin Janasoni had never met people like this. It's certainly possible, if not likely, that he had never witnessed someone passing away with these good states of mind. Right? He may have met arahants. He may have met saints, but he may not have seen them, right, put to the test of death. So, one of the things that the Buddha encouraged us to do is to practice a meditation on death. That when we spend time consciously reflecting on the fact that our life is short, that we're bound to die, that it serves as a motivation to strengthen our effort in practicing the Dhamma, right? Because this not being attached to material things, it's not something that we can just hear, oh, shouldn't be attached to things, check, done, right? It doesn't work like that. We have to work, most of us have to work very hard, little by little, again and again. Right? And if we pretend that we're not going to pass away, that we're not going to have to face this situation at some point, then we lose the opportunity to train. So in another discourse, the Buddha gives us a way to reflect. So the Buddha says, monks, mindfulness of death, when developed and cultivated, is a great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having the deathless as its consummation. So what is the deathless? Nibbana. Right? The final pulling out of greed, hatred, and delusion from the mind. So we're not trapped in this cycle of birth and death. So the Buddha says, hear, monks, when day has receded and night has approached, a monk reflects thus, I could die on account of many causes. A snake might bite me, or a scorpion, or a centipede might sting me, and I might die. That would be an obstacle for me. I might stumble and fall down, or my food might disagree with me, or my bile might become agitated, or my phlegm might become agitated, or sharp winds in me might become agitated, and I might die. That would be an obstacle for me. So, in India, in the time of the Buddha, even now, monks had to face these dangers. Everybody had to face these dangers. That there were poisonous animals, could be bitten by a snake and die right there on the spot. From food poisoning, from injury from an accident, from disturbances inside the body, we could die. So the monk says, or the Buddha says, as night is coming on, a monk does this reflection, kind of making it real in the mind that this death could come this very night. The Buddha goes on to say, this monk should reflect thus. Do I have any bad, unwholesome qualities that have not been abandoned, which might become an obstacle for me if I were to die tonight? So this is the second step in the modern sati. That once we've developed this sense of urgency, gotten in touch with the reality of life, then we think, okay, how's my mind? If I were to die tonight, what kind of mental problems would my mind still have? Would, if I die tonight, would I die still having anger in my mind? Would I die still someone who's jealous and greedy? So a big part of following the Buddha's teachings is being honest about what's in our mind. Right? I can't tell what's in your mind. There are some people who develop that mental ability to see the nature of others' minds, but unless we're fortunate to have a teacher like that, it's up to us. Even with a teacher like that, it's still up to us. We have to look and see What's going on? Do I get angry when people don't listen to what I'm saying? Am I greedy for things? Am I greedy for status? Right? Do I want to be seen as someone who's important? Am I jealous of other people's possessions? When I see someone driving past in a really fancy car, do I think, oh, they don't deserve that? Right? I've worked so hard in this life, I really deserve better than what I have. Right? It's up to us to look at the mind and see what's happening, to be honest. Most people don't like to do that, right? It's unpleasant to look at the messy things in the mind. But without examining the mind, we don't know where to work. We don't know what to clean. So, if you have a room to clean, and you try and clean it with the lights off, it's not going to end up very clean. First rule of cleaning: turn the lights on, see what's there, see the dirt. Right? Pull out the furniture, see the gunk that's behind. You have to do the same thing with the mind. And we do it in a way that's wise and not judgmental, in the sense of, oh, I'm such a bad person, right? I have these bad habits. Because that just strengthens them. We have to think, what's going on in this mind? What's happening in this mind? What are the ways that I react to things? Right? Do I cause suffering for myself? Do I cause suffering for others? How can I be more like my spiritual heroes? So this is the second part. After we reflect on the dangers of life passing away quickly, we think, what's the state of my mind? So there's two options. First option: if upon review, the bhikkhu knows, I have bad, unwholesome qualities that have not been abandoned, which might become an obstacle for me if I were to die tonight, then he should put forth extraordinary desire, effort, zeal, enthusiasm, indefatigability, nice word, unstoppable, mindfulness, and clear comprehension to abandon those bad, unwholesome qualities. So, when we see these unwholesome qualities in our mind, then with this stirred up energy, this spiritual urgency, we think, okay, how can I overcome this? How can I give up this habit? How can I train the mind to reflect on the danger and sensual pleasures instead of just focusing on the beautiful side of sensual pleasures? How can I give up the hatred that I have for those who've done me wrong? How can I give up my anger at those who've hurt the people that I love? Right? The Buddha says, just as one whose clothes or head had caught fire would put forth an extraordinary desire, effort, zeal, enthusiasm, indefatigability, mindfulness, and clear comprehension to extinguish the fire in his clothes or head. So that bhikkhu should put forth extraordinary desire, effort, zeal, enthusiasm, indefatigability, mindfulness, and clear comprehension to abandon those bad, unwholesome qualities. So, if our clothes are on fire, we don't put it off putting out the fire. If our hair is caught on fire, right away, we try and put that fire out. Right? We drop to the floor and roll, and our friends come and try and pat it out. Right? We don't have to think, maybe the fire will go out on its own. Right? Maybe this doesn't really matter. Right? We don't think that. Right away, we want to put out that fire. When we're practicing correctly, when we see these problems in the mind, right away we want to put out that fire. So this is the first possibility. We look at the mind and we see ways that we can improve. The other possibility, the Buddha says, if upon review the bhikkhu knows thus, I do not have any bad, unwholesome qualities that have not been abandoned, which might become an obstacle for me if I were to die tonight, then he should dwell in that same rapture and joy, training day and night in wholesome qualities. So, if by chance we look at the mind and we see, there's no more greed, there's no more hatred, there's no more delusion, no more jealousy, no more anger, the Buddha said, okay, then you should practice with those same good qualities. You should meditate mindfully, happy that we have those good qualities. Right? Because if we're wrong and we're just not able to see them, right, then very easily we can let the good qualities that we do have slip away. So the Buddha says, even if it looks like our mind is pure, okay, keep practicing those same things that led to that purity. Don't think, now I've achieved everything, now I can go and do whatever I want. Buddha says, no, keep training, keep that urgency in our mind. So, these instructions the Buddha gave for when someone is, when night is coming on, when the sun is going down. Then the Buddha gives the same instructions again for when the sun is rising and the day is starting. That we should think, okay, I made it through the night, but I might not make it through the day. Many, many dangerous things. And you may not be afraid of poisonous snakes or scorpions here in Winnipeg, but there's still lots of ways to die. Right? In an instant, we can pass away. The Buddha said, in the daytime as well, we want to do this practice of remembering that death can come and examining the mind to see, where is it that I need to work today to train the mind in wholesome qualities? And just like in the one going into the nighttime, if we see, yes, I have things to work on in this mind. Not just the regular work to make money and support my family, but I have really important work to do in the mind that I know it's possible today for me to get angry at someone. I know it's possible today for me to see the opportunity to help someone in need and pass up that opportunity. Let me train myself in good qualities. So if I do die today, I know that I've spent the day in a good way, in a way that will benefit me, in a way that will benefit others. So, in these two discourses, we've had a chance to reflect on death in a way that's not. That's not depressing, right? In a way that actually can lead to happiness. I mean, it's a strain. It's against the stream, isn't it? To think, I'm going to think about the one thing that everybody doesn't want to think about, and somehow I'm going to end up happy. But it's true, because if we think about death and we think, I know that there's different situations that I can. It can happen when I die. I know that if I hold on to my attachment for the material things around me, I know that death is going to be a horrible situation. But right here, right now, I can look around wisely and think, yeah, all these things, all these people, someday I'm going to have to leave them. They're going to have to leave me, I'm going to have to leave them. And not only at death will I be happy understanding these things wisely, right? Because all these reflections, all these things to do, it's not just preparing us for death, it's preparing us for this life, right? If we're constantly remembering, yes, my time to do good actions is limited. My time to collect good karma, very brief. The chances that I'll have another human life like this, with the opportunity to give up breaking the precepts, right? Many people are born into situations where they have to make a big sacrifice to keep the precepts. That the only way that they can see to survive is by stealing, by killing, right? But now we've been born in a situation where that's not really the case. That for most of us, we can live without stealing, without killing, without telling lies. It's not a common situation. And especially it's not a common situation to learn about karma, to learn how dangerous these things are. So it's all these things that come into focus when we, as disciples of the Buddha, knowing the Buddha's teachings, that we reflect on death. And all these things come to the front. This great good fortune that we have, to have a human life, to have the opportunity to associate with spiritual friends like we are today, the opportunity to learn teachings that lead to happiness in this life and future lives, right? It's not a scary thing. It's something that we can think, yeah, now I have the chance to do good actions. Now I have the chance to train my mind. So I'm happy now, so I'm happy at the time of my death, and so I can even one day completely remove my desire for sensual pleasures. So having had this great opportunity, this rare human life, where we have a mind that can reflect on itself, when we have the opportunity to associate with good spiritual friends who encourage us to follow these teachings that go against the stream. Having listened to these teachings, having reflected wisely on these teachings, may we put these teachings into practice in our lives so we can face death, not with fear, but with happiness, knowing that we've led a good, wholesome life, that we've accumulated good karma into our lives, good karma that we can't be separated from. Through the power of these teachings, through the power of this practice, may we too one day experience the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this Gautama Buddha's dispensation.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.